You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll find out why working women have taken a big hit from the pandemic economy. Now, this past weekend, over 3 million people traveled in airports, breaking the record for the most weekend travelers during the pandemic so far. With the vaccine beginning a slow rollout and at-home testing options in the works, it feels like we're starting to see a light at the end of the tunnel, but we still have a long way to go. Our next two guests are behind the Dear Pandemic Project, two of the researchers there. It's a social media, science-based media campaign designed to answer any and all questions related to COVID-19 for the general public. And you can ask one of those questions right now at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the virus, about the vaccine rollout, the latest news from around the country and around the world? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Amanda Simonek is an associate professor of epidemiology in the Joseph J. Zilber School of Public Health at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Amanda, welcome back.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me on today.
And Malia Jones is a social epidemiologist with the University of Wisconsin Applied Population Laboratory and the UW-Madison Department of Community and Environmental Sociology. Malia, thanks for joining us again.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, too.
Amanda, first off, take a look with us at the latest numbers here in Wisconsin and around the country. How are we doing?
Well, unlike the other times I've been on your program, we are on a decline right now in our average, number 7-day average of cases. So I think as of today, it's about 2,600. And about a month ago, it was nearly, 2.5 times that. So, that's encouraging. However, we also had a record number of deaths, and we know that deaths is a lagging indicator when it comes to COVID-19. So I don't think we're out of the woods yet. And if we think about the number of cases we're seeing on a daily basis right now compared to back in May and June, it's like 4 times what we were observing then. So it's good to be on a downward trajectory, but we're definitely, still in the middle of the winter season and the holidays coming up. So we need to be diligent still about what risk mitigation measures we're engaging in.
And Malia, we're hearing reports in the news over the last few days about a new potentially mutated version of the COVID-19 virus that, at least in the reports I'm seeing, not more dangerous if you get it, but more contagious. We're in early days on this development. What do we know about that?
Yeah, we have heard these reports about a new variant of the SARS-CoV-2 virus that's circulating pretty widely in the UK and some other parts of Europe. And there's been major splashy headlines about it, but you pretty much summed up what we know so far about this. It doesn't appear to be an apocalyptic scenario. There's no really good reason to think so far that the vaccines that we have developed won't work for this variant. And both Pfizer and Moderna are testing that and should be able to release some information to us about it next week. So it's a sort of watch and see. Everyone's following it very closely, but I don't think it's time to panic about this.
All right. Some pieces of good news, and we'll get to some more as with vaccine rollouts. But Amanda, we've been at this for a while now. We've talked some in the past about the risk of pandemic fatigue, people who maybe have been doing the right thing, wearing the masks, distancing, so on, taking chances that they didn't used to. Do we know if that's happening?
I think our downward case trends maybe are an indication that, when people saw our spiking cases at the state level, that they maybe made alternative decisions about, the Thanksgiving holiday, for example. Our recommendation for getting together with people for the holiday was to quarantine if you could for the 2 weeks prior to gathering. And if you couldn't do that, to try to gather outdoors to keep your group of people small, not share food, and kind of choose alternatives that allow for space, wearing masks as much as possible, increased ventilation, reduced, number of people, and reduced time. And I think even though we are feeling the, fatigue, we are approaching a second holiday where we really want to be with our family members, trying to apply those criteria and thinking about ways to reduce risk this holiday it's probably more important than ever because we do have a light at the end of the tunnel right now with vaccines being started to roll out. You know, so we may make that decision to forgo gathering this December for holidays so that we can maximize who can be around next December to gather for that purpose.
We've got two Wisconsin epidemiologists with us right now looking at the latest COVID-19 news. Amanda Simonek from UW-Milwaukee, Malia Jones from UW-Madison. They are both involved in the Dear Pandemic Project. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Malia, Amanda just mentioned the vaccines. They're rolling out. Healthcare workers so far, more waves of them coming. What are you looking at when it comes to how, where, and when vaccines are delivered?
I am really in a very hopeful place. I mean, it's been a long year, but to be ending it on a note where we actually have two what look like very effective and very safe vaccines that have reached the market under emergency use authorization and are actually rolling out. And we're starting to get the people who have been putting their lives on the line, our healthcare providers, vaccinated is just, it's great news. It really does feel like the light at the end of the tunnel. The supply on these vaccines, you know, these manufacturers have been making doses of the vaccines all along, just kind of hoping that they would work out. And knowing that if the vaccines failed or they didn't get approved because of safety concerns, they'd have to just throw them all away. But they were approved. They're very effective. And the clinical trial data showed no reason for major safety concerns. And so that's why we have several, almost 200,000 doses across these two vaccines that are already allocated to the state of Wisconsin. Of course, that's not nearly enough to cover everyone in the state, and it's going to take some time before the vaccines become available to the general public. But I'm just tremendously relieved that our healthcare providers are starting to get their vaccines. And every time I see one of these pictures of someone I know who works in healthcare getting theirs, I'm really delighted by it. And we will start to see people who live in long-term care facilities getting vaccinated next week, I understand.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Tom joins us in Green Bay. Tom, hello.
Hello. Was curious about the ratios nationwide to Wisconsin in terms of infections to death. And I believe nationwide there was something in the neighborhood of 300,000 deaths, whereas infections, I thought, were in the 20 or 30 million range. And how does Wisconsin compare?
Tom, thanks a lot for the call. And that ratio, Amanda, let's throw this to you. It's been a moving target because we knew early we probably had a lot of people catching COVID-19, not getting tested at any point. The numbers have probably gotten more realistic as we've moved along. How do we compare in Wisconsin to the rest of the nation?
Well, certainly a month ago, we were ranking in the top in terms of our case burden. And I think we have dropped down that list, luckily, now. In terms of, I'm not exactly sure what the caller is asking.
Well, I think he's looking for deaths per cases as a ratio.
I don't know that offhand. I don't know. Malia, do you know?
You know, I haven't looked at it recently, but there was a report that came out maybe a couple of months ago now, maybe 2 months ago, that said that suggested that Wisconsin was actually performing relatively well in terms of the number of cases versus the number of deaths. But as you alluded to, Rob, that's very dependent on who gets tested, because that, you know, it's a ratio. So if we want to look at a comparison, we would want to know whether we have captured all the likely cases. And so I think it's a little hard to directly compare. The big uptick in deaths that we're seeing right now is clearly related to the age of people who have gotten sick over the last couple of months. And as Amanda mentioned, that lagged indicator of the burden of disease, that the number of deaths has really shown us that this is not something to be trifled with over the last 2 weeks.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Diane now in Waukesha. Diane, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Diane?
I wanted to bring up the fact that I have a daughter who is a recent graduate of college, and she's an RN at UW Health. And because she will be getting the she is available to get the vaccine, but she's a young woman who hasn't had any children yet. And so we're concerned about long-term effects with respect to that, birth defects and or fertility, all those kinds of issues. So,
Diane, thanks a lot for the call. I don't know, I'll throw this to Malia, but hand it off if you want. Do we know anything about women who are currently pregnant getting the vaccine or women who may someday be pregnant getting the vaccine now?
Yeah, there is this rumor flying around about the possibility that this vaccine could cause fertility issues. And I want to emphasize that there is no factual basis for this rumor at all. The vaccines were not trialed in pregnant women. They were certainly trialed in women across all ages. And some of those women happened to get pregnant during the trial. There were no reasons to think that the vaccine had any negative effect on those pregnancies. And professional organization that represents OBGYNs came out very strongly saying that pregnant women who are in high risk jobs, such as nursing, should have the option to get the vaccine if they want it. And it was approved by the FDA. It was recommended by the FDA and the CDC for administering in pregnant women if they want to. So there was some extensive discussion of this, whether there was possibility of birth defects and in pregnant women. And the consensus amongst the scientists in the independent panel for the FDA and the CDC was that there's really no plausible biological mechanism by which that could happen. These vaccines are not thought to cross the placental barrier. They don't contain any kind of virus at all. They're not made with a virus, and they really rely on the normal immune functions of the human body in order to produce immunity. So I am not worried. And I think that time will tell that there is not a reason to suspect that there, you know, anything could go wrong with birth defects or fertility down the line either.
And Rob, I'll add, you know, we have covered this on our Dear Pandemic social media campaign. We posted on this very topic, as well as sort of what we can expect in terms of following the safety and, you know, the reporting of any adverse events moving forward. So those topics, people can go to dearpandemic.org and search for those posts and see a comprehensive overview of answers to those types of questions.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to two of the editors of the Dear Pandemic Project. Malia Jones is a social epidemiologist at UW-Madison. Amanda Simonek, associate professor of epidemiology at UW-Milwaukee. Still time for your question for our guests. You can email ideas@WPR.org or call in 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your COVID-19 related questions. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with our two Dear Pandemic guests, Amanda Simonek, associate professor of epidemiology at UW-Milwaukee, and Malia Jones, social epidemiologist at UW-Madison. You can join in with your COVID-related questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What is on your mind right now? And Amanda, when I talk to Dear Pandemic people, I like to ask what you are being asked. What kind of questions are you hearing a lot lately?
Well, I think with the, you know, past month, almost every week we have new vaccine news. We've been getting a lot of questions about the vaccine, both, you know, how it was developed, how safety monitoring is going to work, and, why it was approved, and, you know, lots of reasons and questions related to that. So, for sure, that's been a dominant theme lately.
And Malia, I'm seeing news about faster test kits, maybe at-home test kits being available to us before too long. What are we seeing there?
That's right. The state of Wisconsin just, I think it was today, announced that they are going to be making available test kits by mail. And this is a PCR-based test kit that uses saliva that you self-collect in a kit at home and then mail in to get a COVID test. And those are going to be available to everyone in the state of Wisconsin who requests one. So you can get info about that at the Department of Health Services website if you want to request a test kit. I think it's maybe helpful for some of those parts of Wisconsin that are more rural and people don't have really ready access to testing, or perhaps it would take a really long drive to get to a test site. So I think that's going to be a helpful addition, one more tool in our toolbox to continue fighting this pandemic.
We had a question. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I agree. I think the more options we have for testing, the better. And, you know, if you are home and you're sick, this is, you know, potentially a way to not have to go out of the house when you're not feeling well to go get tested as well.
We had a question for Jill in Madison who asked, why are the death rates higher when we've seen the case numbers going down? And Amanda, that gets into a little bit of what we talked about earlier, the lagging indicator. Today's test results are unfortunately the people who might be dying in a couple few weeks.
Yes, unfortunately, there is this lag. You know, it can take about an average of 5 days after being exposed for someone to develop symptoms, and then maybe another 5 or 6 days before they would have severe enough symptoms to need to be hospitalized. Then you can imagine some time in the hospital before they would need to go into ICU care, for instance. And so there is about, you know, we expect almost a 4 to 6 week lag between when you have a spike in cases or surge in cases and when you start to see, you know, the related deaths. And so the fact that we have had increasing deaths, you know, we may not be completely out of the woods yet in terms of the deaths that we're going to observe from our previous surge here in Wisconsin.
I'd say we're even right in the middle of the deaths that we're, you know, we could have predicted the deaths that we're seeing today based on the numbers that we were seeing 4 to 6 weeks ago. And so Amanda, the good news here is here that we're trending back down. And so in another few weeks, we will expect to see deaths trending back down again.
And I hate to step on good news. It looks good in Wisconsin, the things arcing down in terms of cases in the right direction. When I look nationwide, Amanda, not great. Things have been spiraling upwards in cases, and then following that again, deaths going up. How much does that worry you about, you know, things might bounce back here to Wisconsin if they're going up elsewhere in the country?
Well, I mean, I think in Wisconsin and anywhere where there's still susceptible individuals, this infection, you know, has the potential to spread in the population. And that isn't going to change until, you know, we reach a level of herd immunity, ideally through vaccination. And so it is going to require individuals to still, you know, maintain vigilance about space and masking and staying out of poorly ventilated spaces, you know, for a while. So I think we're on a good downward trend now. We don't want to sort of let up or let our guard down because, you know, I think we could experience another surge if that happens.
Talking to two experts with the Dear Pandemic Web Project, Amanda Simonek and Malia Jones, both epidemiologists in the UW system. Back to your calls now. Bill is with us in Green Bay. Bill, hello.
Hi.
What did you want to ask about, Bill?
Oh, I have the most important question that you're going to have today. I'm a senior. I'm 72 years old. I've had two heart attacks, open heart surgery, and I have an aneurysm. I've made about at least 10 phone calls. I'd like to know, being at risk, I have an aneurysm. My doctor doesn't know. The hospital doesn't know. I think it's because of geography. We're in Green Bay, not in Phoenix. My cousin knows that he's going to get his vaccination next week. And unfortunately, we're in Wisconsin. My doctor doesn't know. My hospital doesn't know. Nobody knows how the seniors at risk, when they're going to get it, and how they're going to get it, and where they're going to get it.
Bill, thanks for the call. Does either of you want to tackle that? How somebody in a high-risk group like Bill knows when they can get the vaccine?
Yeah, I would be happy to tackle that, Bill. It's a really important question. And the answer is going to be partially unsatisfying. So just this past weekend on Sunday, the CDC panel that makes recommendations about priority groups, you know, we can't vaccinate everybody. We only have so many doses, so we've got to prioritize. The CDC panel that makes those recommendations met and decided that the next priority group, it's called phase 1B, they're recommending be people who are age 75 years and up, as well as some frontline healthcare, some essential frontline workers. And we are waiting for Wisconsin's Department of Health Services to make a decision about whether they're going to adopt those recommendations as given or make some modifications to them in terms of who's going to be next up to be eligible for the vaccine. Now, group 1C, the next group after 1B, the CDC recommended would be people who are age 65 and up and anyone age 16 and up with a serious underlying risk factor. My guess, Bill, is that you're going to be in one of these next two groups and that you can watch the Department of Health Services website for info about how exactly to receive that vaccine. We have a couple of the pharmacy chains in Wisconsin that are primed to distribute the vaccines. It's a huge logistical operation. And I think that we can all, I know everyone is really impatient to get their vaccines, but we're going to have a little grace and wait for Department of Health Services and then the logistical operations to get sorted out here.
Bill, thanks for calling in. I hope you get good news soon. And that's all the time we have. Amanda, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob.
And Malia, thanks for being with us again.
Yep, thank you.
We've been talking to Amanda Simonek, Associate Professor of Epidemiology in the Joseph J. Zilber School of Public Health at UW-Milwaukee, and Malia Jones, Social Epidemiologist with the University of Wisconsin Applied Population Lab and the UW-Madison Department of Community and Environmental Sociology. They're both editors of Dear Pandemic on social media. Search for Dear Pandemic for lots of other answers to COVID-19 questions. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.